Exxon's or Sinclair's or somebody else's, and you know, until there's a match between refinery capacity and pipeline capacity and field production, you got all those things in balance. The imbalance always gets fixed with the least efficient means, which is what we got now, is the trucking.
Okay. Scott, I imagine that your concern is the route and how close the proximity to waterways. And why don't you tell us what you're concluding about this?
Yeah, you know, during the open house, one of the open houses that I attended in Bountiful, I had the same opinion as Tom that there was very little information there. They had basically one route shown, and that was the one following the Weber River. That was their preferred route. But over the last few months, we've had many meetings with Tesoro, and they've been very good to work with. They've been very open and amenable to look at alternative routes. In fact, I think we're getting very close to something that we would be very happy with as far as a route that has a separation away from the waterways and wetlands areas. So, you know, this is the first time I really worked that closely with an oil pipeline like this, and I appreciate their openness and their willingness to cooperate with us.
Okay, thank you. Rob or Gary, any concluding thoughts?
The only thing I'd like to echo what this gentleman here said about if the pipeline is designed and constructed properly and operated properly, maintained properly, it should be safe. It should be able to be operated without major incident for many, many years and serve the public and be pretty much invisible to average Joe public. You do see a little scar on the hill where the trees were removed, and that's something people don't like about pipelines. But I still think it's a better alternative than trucking, in my opinion.
Okay.
I'd like to make one more comment about the safety of a pipeline. There are some studies done that I read about that trucking is about 70 times more dangerous than pipelines. Right. And that was, I believe, with deaths and injuries. And not to pick on the natural gas industry, but a majority of deaths and injuries and property damage are from leaks over natural gas pipelines, not oil pipelines. And it's an obvious reason why, because of the pressure and the buildup. But the biggest concern everyone has is a potential spill and polluting our waterways. And as a fisherman and loving this area, I have the same concern. But I think if it's done properly, this pipeline can be put in without any realistic potential damage to our environment.
Okay, thank you. David, I guess we'll give you one more shot at it.
Yeah, my quick shot would be, we sort of had a wake-up call on pipelines through this happening in our community, and I really think we ought to be more concerned about some of the older pipelines. The state puts out a map, oil and gas pipelines in Alaska. It's on the internet, Google it up, or oil and gas pipelines in Utah, I'm sorry. Google up Utah oil pipeline, and you'll see this map, and you'll be surprised at all the oil and gas pipelines there are around, most of which are quite a few years old. This community is probably in, you know, I don't think we're in a lot of danger from the Chevron pipeline. I think it's a well-operated pipeline, but probably more so than we would be from this future pipeline, if it is sited and engineered properly, and it looks like our local governmental officials are going to make sure it is. And I think Tesoro needs to, I think they're a little bit gun shy, that's why they're not here tonight. They need to realize that this community might accept their proposal, might very much accept it, and might even embrace it. We need to see what it really is, where they're talking about putting that pipeline.
Okay. Information always helps. Okay. If there are no further comments, let's have a round of applause for our panel. Thank you, gentlemen. And now, Charles, you want to talk about what comes next?
Yes. Well, we're going to transition into our audience Q&A time now. So, again, we're sticking with the three-minute rule. So anybody and everyone that would like to ask a question or make a statement is invited to come to the microphone and just line up right down the center aisle here. Also, I've been asked to offer this invitation. If you come to the microphone with a technical question, a question that none of our brilliant panelists up here are able to answer because they don't work for Tesoro, and so it's a Tesoro-specific question. If you get up here and you can't get your question answered, we have a notepad on the back table back here where you can write down your question along with your name and mailing address, and we will get your question to the Tesoro folks so that they can respond directly to you. And I want to thank you, Janet Van Hartsfield. She's going to be our timekeeper. So again, remember the yellow card and the red card, and we're off to the races. So anybody that would like to ask a question, come on up.
Please feel free to do so. And Charles, did you want them to state their name first? Did you say that?
Yes.
Did I miss? Yeah, please state your name first. And go for it.
Hello, my name is Marian Klaus, and I have a question. I do understand the difference between a spill on land and a spill in the water. And having seen what happened in Kalamazoo when the heavy waxy crude got into the sediments, my question is, if that should happen, what is that going to do to impact the drinking water for all of the thousands of people that rely on this watershed? And two, how long does that impact last?
Well, that's a great question. And we've had the same question. What gets in the soil and what's released into the water, if it's put into the river or close to the river where some of that volatile organics can enter the water, VOCs or volatile organic carbons are rather difficult to remove in the treatment process. The Weber River feeds about or treats water, delivers water, drinking water for about 620,000 people. And so it's not a significant, or it's not an insignificant source of drinking water. And so we're really concerned about the potential of that happening. And that's why our discussions have been with Tesoro, to give us a separation. So if we do have a leak, we'll have time to respond, they'll have time to respond, and they'll be able to clean up before it reaches a waterway. But my answer is that, yeah, it will be difficult to treat. In fact, we might not be able to treat it for a short period of time and deplete our water supply for a week or two until we get things diverted and cleaned up somewhat so that we can treat it. But we're of great concern about that same issue.
Chris?
And just to follow on, Marian, you mentioned the Kalamazoo spill. That was 2010, and it's still portions of that river are still contaminated and being attempted to clean up, so it can take, depending on the volume of the spill and the conditions of where the spill occurs, it can take years and years to address it.
The Weber's the most important, but it also affects the Provo. And again, we see the entire length of the Camas Valley as one giant wetlands. I mean, not meeting federal standards, but there's a lot of water that in the wet years it springs and it's like a big sponge. So.
Okay. Next question, sir.
Dave Huffmeyer, Summit County resident. There was a large earthquake just north of Anchorage yesterday or today, I can't remember. 6.2. I don't know the juxtaposition of the earthquake and the pipeline, but what is the relationship and what kinds of things are done to deal with that?
Automatically hand me the mic on that one. It's actually pipelines themselves, as they go across the country, they're buried about 3 feet deep, generally do well in earthquakes just for the ground shaking. You don't think of it this way, but steel is actually ductile. It can have a wave go through it like that. Steel can bend and actually there's a certain point that it can bend and bend back to its normal shape and not lose any of its strength. That's called the point of elasticity. So generally steel pipelines do okay in earthquakes. What you hear about happening in earthquakes is where pipelines are connected to something rigid, like where they come up out of the ground and they're connected to a gas line, is connected to an apartment complex in California, and then there's an earthquake and something breaks there. So it's not foolproof. The above ground facilities, like the refinery, for example, or the place where the trucks are going to line up in Duchesne to put this liquid into the pipeline, if that's how it works. I don't know how it's going to be designed. That's probably more susceptible to potentially being damaged in an earthquake than as the pipeline traverses over the land. So, I mean, I don't know if you want to add to that. But.
One quick comment that through discussions with Tesoro, they also have electronic monitors on the pipeline. So if there is movement in the pipeline, they can shut those valves as well very quickly. So
that's a good point. Maybe I can add to that. One of the things that does have potential to jeopardize a pipeline and kind of in a surprising way if you're not prepared for it is something like a landslide. Landslides have caused ruptures on pipelines in the past. Typically when you're routing a pipeline in today's world, and that's one of the things that the federal agency, in this case I guess it's the Forest Service, it's not the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, the Forest Service will require the company that's proposing a pipeline route to actually have a geotechnical analysis done where they are looking at slope stability and the places where they're putting that pipeline, especially with regard to slopes. If there is a likelihood of a landslide, they have to mitigate for that and reroute it. And sometimes sensors, valves, and generally the best thing is find a different place to put it, you know, route it up that ridge line or something and go down around it.
Ma'am, go ahead.
My name's Danielle. I'm a resident near Wanship in Summit County. Thank you all for giving us this useful information, and I'd like to thank the county especially for enacting these temporary ordinances because I think that's going to have a beneficial impact. I have a quick question. You've mentioned that since Tesoro has filed the lawsuit against the ordinances, against the county, that they have talked about some new routes. Are those available anywhere to view? Can you give us any information about those?
I don't know the whole length of it because I haven't, you know, I guess like all of us, I'm focused on what it does directly to me. But the maps that are on display here tonight are the old alignment, and the maps that are on Tesoro's website as of this afternoon are the originally proposed alignment. The maps that I've seen of what they're now proposing through my property are more than maps. They've actually had an environmental crew of about a dozen people out there for 3 days, you know, interviewing frogs and counting arrowheads. So the area where they're spending money, the alignment that they're investing in, is not the alignment that is on public display, and I can't explain why, but I think that's a failing in the way they've approached this from a public relations standpoint, partly because they've got a whole bunch of people pissed off who will not be affected by the new alignment. It'll be moved out of their yard and it won't affect them. And then there are going to be a whole bunch of other people who are going to be taken by surprise when they said, wait a minute, I thought this thing was way down in Francis and now it's coming this way through Samak. And I can't explain why that isn't out there, and because that's clearly what they've invested the money in and the route they're pursuing.
So, let me just say that, remember that it's the NEPA process, and when they met with us, it was to explore and get a sense of, you were there, Scott. It wasn't, they still got a lot of engineering work to do yet, but you'll start seeing maps as we actually get into the formal NEPA process.
Yeah, and they are literally changing alignments weekly. I mean, and so it's very difficult for them to put out an official alignment map that is never official. So I understand where they're coming from. They don't want to put something out that's temporary again, although it does make sense if they've got some wholesale changes. I think it would make sense for them to get those out for public review as soon as possible.
Where it's moved by a couple of miles, I think they owe it to the public to disclose that.
Can I add something? Part of the NEPA process requires a pipeline, a company that's proposing to construct a pipeline, to evaluate alternate routes. They can't just say, here's the route and that's what it is. They are required to basically show through that process that that's the best route, or have good reasons why the other alternatives are not as good of an alternative as that route. I didn't say that well, but you guys know what I'm talking about. So that's part of the reason probably why, as things evolve, they're going to change. But there should be a point where they publish what all those different alternates are and why they're selecting the one that they're selecting or recommending, that the government approve the one that they're recommending as the preferred.
Okay, our next question.
Hi, my name is Barbara Andrews, and I just have a couple of questions. First, the big word that seems to have come out tonight is if they do this, if they do that, then everything will be fine. Secondly, I was wondering, do you have any more realistic idea of how much oil is left in this whole area that they're going to be piping out? And if, say, the whole thing with cars changes to more electronic cars instead of gasoline cars, and we have all of this pipeline, are they still going to be taking such wonderful care of it that they're promising? And then I was also wondering, where is Tesoro incorporated, so that if there ever is a problem, who would, where would that problem be relegated to? And then I was wondering, if there's a spill on Tom's property, would he have to sue himself, or would the county help him, or who would be his advocate? Thank you. Okay.
Lots of questions there. Who wants to jump in first? But I think you're talking about liability.
Yes.
If an oil spill occurs.
One of the first questions was, you know, about cars and, yeah, and the technology changing. And I think it'll be decades. And I think we've already heard from the governor's office, the population of Utah is planning on doubling in the next 50 years. And and oil is not going away that quickly. It'll be around for still a long time, is my opinion. But
yeah, there's a question of what your oil reserves or resources are in an oil field at $90 oil versus at $150 oil. And we're probably going to see $150 oil in our lifetime. You know, Alaska essentially depleted their Prudhoe Bay reserves back at $15 oil, but they've still got a million barrels a day coming down that pipeline because oil's so much more expensive now and more costly. The petroleum industry is pretty good at developing new extraction technologies. I think the Uinta Basin has a lot of oil in it that's going to come out over the next 30, 40, 50 years. It's not going to stop. And I don't think our country's a long, long ways from us all driving electric cars. And then we have to remember electricity itself doesn't just come out of that little doohickey in the wall. Something has to be done to generate electricity. And sometimes it's burning fossil fuel.
And I just wanted to address the first part of your questions, the if part, because I'm the one that said if. In addition to making sure that, yeah, there is proper design and construction, I'd like to see within the design several things. And of course, that most obvious is to avoid surface and groundwater as much as possible, where the line runs. Extra protection whenever the pipeline has to run under a stream or a river or a wetland system, if there's a way to double wall or put the pipeline within a 12-inch line inside a 16 or 18-inch sleeve when it courses under a water body like that. I'd like to see if that's possible or if that's part of the design. I'd like to see that there are a number of stations that, as they call them now, that are, they're for other points of conversation, repumping stations or gathering stations. I'd like to see those lay on an impermeable liner of some sort with berms, so that if there is a spill there, and typically that's where releases occur, that's kind of the weak point in a pipeline where there are gauges and valves and pumps and seals that can give. Those are the areas I'd like to see have more permeability underneath them, or impermeability, I'm sorry, even if it's to compact the soil to a higher density. So those are some of the recommendations that go into that if that can make a better design.
I think Barbara also asked about the liability issue. Have any of you seen a situation where there's been an oil spill where the provider hasn't stepped forward and assumed responsibility and liability?
Yes, I've actually been involved. And what they generally do is, as an oil and gas operator, they just make you clean the surface, clean the soil, if that means digging up where the contaminated soil is, or turning the soil over and working it back into the soil, which if it's a small enough spill, you can do that, and it doesn't hurt the environment. Matter of fact, real quick example, we had an oil spill in the wheat field of Oklahoma. 5 years later, after tilling the soil, the wheat grew better in that half-acre spill area than anywhere else. Oil in its natural state is a substance that actually can act as a fertilizer.
Okay. No problems with financial liability. I guess I'm following up with financial liability.
Liability in the event of a spill?
In the event of a spill, I'm assuming that the company, in this case,
in the court system, some if they're sued.
Yeah.
But as far as any liability, they would have to do any cleanup, especially if there's any spill in the water, that would impact the environment tremendously, and it'd cost the oil company a lot. But go ahead.
Well, that's what happens is you end up with the liability lawsuit, and you hope that you have a solvent company behind it, and that it isn't hidden under, you know, five shell corporations that have no assets before you get to somebody who really has it. But there's no quick solution. I think there are still cases pending in Alaska on the Exxon Valdez that was, you know, decades ago. A little different approach with the BP spill in New Orleans, where they rather quickly put together a fund that now people are just pillaging randomly, that if you were alive on that day, you get a check. So it goes from one extreme to the other, but if you're the landowner looking at some significant part of your property polluted with an oil spill, it's life-changing. It's not something that goes away.
You know, I did this layer after layer of corporation. That is an issue. I've been involved in a couple of brownfield situations where we were trying to deal with old abandoned refineries, and it was amazing how many layers. So you could not really get to anybody that had any money. So, I mean, that's something we need as a nation to get better at, and as well as bonding for these kinds of things. But some of these big oil operations end up, by the time you get down to really somebody with money, it's too late.
Happens with movie studios too, apparently.
Okay. This is about pipelines time. Okay, next question, Mr. Mike.
Mike Andrews, the other half. A couple of questions, a follow-up, and then one for Bob. The technology of it, my cynical nature leads me to believe that Tesoro will more than likely follow the cheapest route in building and also use the cheapest technology. Now, that's my cynical nature. But following up on the question, is it engineeringly possible to create that sleeve around a pipeline which would collect oil that spills, particularly in the areas where it crosses rivers or runs adjacent to the rivers? You know, we had tankers that had single hulls until they discovered that if they put a double hull around a tanker, they usually avoided catastrophes when there was a tanker accident. My second question for Bob. Bob, I'm absolutely that Bob up there.
Bob Jeff.
The second question revolves around planning for the inevitable emergency, for the inevitable failure. Is the county in a mode right now where it is beginning to develop the emergency response plans? And would it be possible to require a bond of significant dollar amount to assure that that got paid for by the people responsible for it?
So I'm not sure I remember all those questions. I want to start with, I think their original route was based, as was said, by where there was already a route. The route that they have last discussed with us will be quite a bit more expensive and quite a bit higher in the mountain, but quite a bit further away from wetlands and rivers. So, it's all down to cost benefit. If you want to go with an inexpensive route but you can't get it on, or someday county adopts ordinances to protect its water supply. You have to do what's feasible and still doable. So that was one issue. I'm glad you asked about emergency response. It's been a major emphasis on county government. We've for the first time in a long time, had a very competent and full-time emergency manager. We've been training and doing exercises. It is my sense that it is the real medal of a county is how well we do in a disaster. And you know, since I've been here, we've had like 3 major fires, 2 floods, and still waiting for the pestilence. But
we're anxious for you to move on, Bob.
That could be it. You know, we just did a weather thing with climate change. Who knows that we wouldn't get this some snowstorm that would shut Park City down in the middle of a tourist season, and that if your electricity goes out, all your heating goes out. So we have been practicing that a lot, and I can't answer the middle question about double hose and things. But
I'll pass it to somebody. I can address that. When a pipe is installed inside of another pipe, we call that a casing. And casings are used in pipeline industry often. One of the things that is at risk when you use a casing is it's difficult to assure that the casing pipe and the main pipe that's inside of the pipe don't come in contact with each other. And the reason why that's important is we didn't talk about that when we were talking about the safety because we didn't have a lot of things, but pipelines, in order to keep them from having corrosion happen when they're buried in the ground, have a system running on them that uses direct current. It's called cathodic protection system. And there's basically a small current that goes into the ground and comes onto the pipeline, and then there's what we call an anode that's buried in the ground, which is usually a piece of zinc or something that will corrode instead of the pipeline corroding. And pipeline companies are required not only to have this installed, but to monitor it and take readings all along their pipeline to assure that it's working at the right levels. And when you put a pipe in a casing, you have a possibility. And years ago, they used casings for almost every road crossing. It's easier when you're doing construction. You can go pound a casing through and not even care if that pipe gets scratched up and dinged, and then you put your nice, beautiful new pipe through it, and you're done with crossing that road, and it's way faster. Well, my company, I work in natural gas. We're taking those casings out now that were put in the 50s because there's a possibility of corrosion being caused by that casing. So the double wall thing on a crossing isn't really very feasible to my knowledge. What is typically done is they use heavier wall pipes, so there's less of a likelihood of, or there's more resistance, if you will, to some kind of an external impact that could cause a leak. And then you put that in a place where it's under a waterway or a roadway even, and things like that, where it needs to be a little bit stronger to resist the external forces. Did you want to add anything more to that?
No. In this particular pipe, since it's a heated pipe, it already is wrapped with another pipe. It's a high-density polyethylene pipe that holds the insulation and the electronics close to the steel pipe. And so it won't hold a lot of pressure, but any leakage it will capture, and there's sensors within that outer casing pipe that allow the company then to say, okay, we've got a leak somewhere, let's shut the pipe down. So this is a little different technology than I've been experience
that's not
with.
Something I have experience with either.